Hey folks, hope that you're doing well. I have a few housekeeping items before today's episode. First of all, today's is a recording of an RS Backers live chat that we did a week ago with Kyle Connor from Out of Spec. Dude is amazing, great guy, but so knowledgeable. So we had an RS Backer live chat where we were all together chatting with him live, and this is a partial recording of that. If you want to see the full recording, head on over to rivianstories.com and become a backer. If you want to be a part of future recordings like this, become a backer. Secondly, in case you haven't caught it, many of you have requested that we release these podcast episodes as a proper podcast, like on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Amazon or Spotify, all those things. As of now, go and search for Rivian Stories on your podcast player, and you should see probably two. Subscribe to the most recent one with the icon that you see all the time here on YouTube. We're glad that now you'll be able to listen to these podcasts inside your actual Rivian and more. So check that out. And then third, a little bit about what's coming ahead. And I'll start by saying congrats to Jimmy and Nikki for taking delivery of the R1T. Rivian was kind enough to help Skylar and I, along with Jimmy and Nikki's guide, Sarah, get out to surprise them for the delivery. It was a blast. Thank you, Rivian. Tune in because towards the end of this week, we'll have the surprise video. And then sometime probably next week or the week after, we're planning on a video that's kind of like everything you need to know about Rivian delivery. So there's a lot of good stuff coming. Please like and subscribe. It helps us out a ton. But with that said, here is a portion. It's actually about an hour of our live chat with Kyle Connor of Out of Spec Reviews. So Kyle, I'll jump into this because we know we're all want to respect your time, but we are so appreciative of you not only being here with us tonight, which is just a huge honor, but everything you've done for the Rivian community the past few weeks has been huge as far as all the in-depth and just interacting with the community. We all really appreciate it. And as I kind of told you before, we're all pre-order holders or true fans. And so you've just been a great help to us. I think there's a bunch of questions below. And I'll pull an audible and just start off. At one point, you mentioned that this was the first time that you kind of have interacted with the fan base of a community, of a brand. And did you enjoy that? Are you going to do that more? And then what do you think of the Rivian community so far?
well, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. And I know Rivian Stories is growing, and it's actually pretty big, way bigger than I had expected. You guys have a lot of fans and viewers inside and out of Rivian. And so really cool to be on with you guys. And yeah, no rush from my side. This is my last item of the day, and already cracked open a beer and have some more in the fridge over here. So nice. We have time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So the question was interacting with the fan base. I guess we've done it once really before with the Tesla community, because that's how we started, years ago, was with electric vehicles and Tesla stuff. And we would do these videos, but it wasn't really like we had any access to a new car or something excited. So, you know, I just knew a lot of people in the Tesla community. But with the Rivian, it was interesting to reach out to the Rivian forums, you guys, some of the Facebook groups, because what we're able to do is get an idea of where there's a lack of actual knowledge, like where, because these are not in the hands of customers, at least when we had ours, or they were just trickling in. Right. Now they've seemed to ramp up within the last week or two. Mm-hmm. And, it was a great opportunity to figure out what people really wanted to see. And of course, that pretty much aligned with what we were already going to do with our coverage for the most part. But what it did was give us a little bit of validation as to like, okay, like towing is a huge concern or charging is a huge concern, and go into these particular things. And then like drag racing, like, who really cares? We already know it's fast. We put that up last, you know? So, it was a really interesting thing in terms of interacting with communities in the future. First of all, it's very rare that you find a community that's as interactive and as passionate as Rivian enthusiasts. Mm. And that's because it's a new truck. It's a lifestyle piece. You're buying into not only the truck, but new friends, new adventures. It's a new way of living because it unlocks so many different items. There's never once been before an electric truck. So it's a new thing. And very rarely do you see this type of passion within car communities. You see I would say maybe 10 years ago, the Mini community had something like this with Mini Coopers. You see it with Harley riders. You see it with, of course, now Tesla owners. Although this is, I think the community is going a little bit downhill, in my opinion, just in terms of influencers and all this stuff getting involved. So I don't know. I thought that it was a really genuine, passionate group of people. So I just reached out with a forum post and said, what do you guys want to see? And that, then it just, you know, now I feel like we're members of the Rivian community, even though
we
don't have one yet.
Yep. Jimmy gets his delivered tomorrow at 5 p.m. in Florida.
Oh, no way. What specification did you go with?
So Glacier White, Black Mountain, 20 inch all terrains, off-road, the off-road.
So same spec we had.
Basically the same spec you had. As soon as I saw that truck, I was like, Nikki.
So
I hope they don't give you the one we had, but you know.
Well, yeah, you have to elaborate on that now, Kyle.
Oh no, it was, there's nothing. I mean, the truck's fine. I mean, we didn't really break it too much.
Yeah. All right, okay, so everyone's here. I'm gonna kick us off with this first one, and it's from Skylar. He said that on Twitter, you said that you ran into a Rivian engineer at the airport, and they'll be working on some of the things based on your feedback. And can you share which items?
Probably maybe not. Yeah. I mean, the guy was awesome, and I don't want to like jeopardize his situation for anything. But he had been working with Rivian for quite a while. They told us that their engineering teams had been reviewing our videos and watching stuff and taking notes and learning from what we've presented. I think part of it was a lot of the things that we commented that we are not so into are already being worked on. And then a lot of it was new, interesting items that they're now exploring. And so, yeah, really, I think the big takeaway there is a lot of times we produce videos on cars and we're not sure whoever watches them, right? And I know on many occasions, engineers do watch our stuff. I know a lot of the engineers at a lot of car companies personally. And we do have that relationship, just beyond this media PR department situation. But it's not very common. And here, at least, it's nice to know that the guys are watching our stuff and taking note as to what we're saying. And I think it just instills confidence in the truck and through updates to come.
Yep. Awesome. So this is from Teacher Man. He's a longtime supporter. Thanks, Teacher Man. So you have a ton of experience with vehicles of all types. After watching your videos, your reaction just kept getting stronger. What are the biggest experiences that pushed you into becoming a passionate fan of this vehicle?
Yeah, well, a lot of it was shot out of sync, so keep that in mind. Some of the early stuff went up later.
Okay, there we go. That's true.
but certainly very impressed with the vehicle. I think what keeps coming back to me is the hardware is all there. The vehicle's got all the stuff you could need. It's got all the power in the world. It's got all the build quality. It's got all the solidity, the, you know, little bits when you close the door, it's a nice thunk. It, you know, just even other things, like if it's cold outside, the inside of the door stays warm. Things that can't be software updated, all there, all good, really not many major concerns. Like in terms of body lines, I thought our truck was really well, but the hood seemed to be a little bit misaligned. And so, after looking at some other trucks since then, production ones, I saw another truck that was misaligned a little bit the other way, but like, who cares about this? This is just little switches and screws. Pretty much everything hardware wise, solid, but software updates needed to come. And the truck will be improved, hopefully, with updates. Things like dog mode, things like more stable navigation, things like Driver Plus, the driver assistance system being more stable on pre-mapped roads. And I know these are things they're working on and coming. And, you know, the hardware's there, but they need some software optimization.
I'll follow up with this one real quick. Elaborate on why you prefer percentage over miles.
Percentage over miles. I mean, this has been a hot topic for a long time. Jimmy, do you own a electric car?
I do. I have a Tesla and a Model S and a Chevy Bolt.
Do you keep them in miles or percent?
I go back and forth, and it doesn't bother me one way or the other, to be honest.
Miles just infuriates me. I guess here's my issue with miles. It's not always accurate, but the percentage point is always accurate. I mean, with, you know, let's ignore BMS sway and all the weird stuff. Percentage is where you are now without question. The 132 miles remaining or whatever it might be is, a, you know, basically it either can or can't be true. And you're not sure which, because it all depends on future driving. And in a Tesla, for example, and a Lucid, they're rated, the displayed range is on a rated range calculation. So what it means is, you know, for the viewers who, I know you guys know this, but for the viewers who don't know, it's if basically the car is EPA rated at a set efficiency number. Let's say it's 280 watt hour per mile. What the car is doing is it's showing, okay, at 280 watt hour per mile multiplied by how many kilowatt hours I have left in the battery pack, here's how far I can go. And I know on that calculation, if I drive in city traffic lightly, I'll exceed it. And then if I drive really hard on a highway, I know I'm going to get less. In the Rivian, it's a guessometer calculation, how I refer to it and a lot of other reviewers refer to it. And what that means is it's taking in weather, trip, driving style, drive mode, all of these different variables, and then spitting out a number that it thinks you'll go. And honestly, it's pretty accurate in the Rivian as long as you drive normally. It's really good. But the thing is, especially for me, I have such varied driving styles where I can go from shredding up a canyon really hard to just cruising at, you know, 50 miles an hour down a back road or whatever, that the miles don't mean anything to my driving style. But I know whatever it says in percent is what I have left in there. And typically in the Rivian, you can pretty much multiply your percent number by 3 and know you'll make it to wherever you got to go, as long as you drive gently, because the truck will do about 300 miles on the charge if you drive slowly. So that's my rationale, at least.
Yep, it's good stuff. This next one from Skylar again. While your impressions were positive overall, where do you see room for improvement in both design and software?
Good question. We need massaging seats in this thing. I don't know why it doesn't have it. You know, maybe this isn't a big deal. But like... that's like one of the best features in cars that we're really lucky to have. And yeah, massaging seats for sure in a $100,000 truck. Now, just even if they charge $5,000 for it, give us like the best seat in the world. People will pay for it. And real improvement, I think we could have in some of these, you know, sort of low friction surface calibration type stuff. So motor calibration, left and right, things like this. I think I can talk about it. I'm not sure if I can, but if I can't, then well, whatever. I already said it. Basically, we were up with the guys at Magna, who are our main backing sponsor. They allow us to make YouTube videos. We were with them doing some videos and testing this past week in Michigan. We just got back. And they had a Rivian R1T in for benchmarking work. And they're putting, you know, current clips on the motors on each side to see, basically, okay, we got the truck on an off-road park, loaded up with this wheel in the air, how much current's going to each motor, and then they're basically looking at how the driveline or how different driving profiles, you know, from off-road auto to rock crawl to rally, how that handles the power distribution of the truck. And what I thought was really cool was most of the stuff of what they're finding basically was what we've been saying about the truck, which is it's a little bit awkward in very loose surface stuff because you don't have locking axles. And so they're doing a virtual locker. And I think this could use some work for low traction surface, either deep mud or snow. Need some better calibration with the four motor stuff. In my opinion, I would love to just have a clutch connecting left and right and saying lock the axles, so I know exactly where the power is going to go. I don't need to put my foot in it, let a wheel spin up, and then think about where to send the power. I think that would be really nice. In terms of software, we need better route planning, much better route planning. And honestly, probably much more setting. So like if EQS is the best example of route planning, I think, because it's really good. It has everything you need for an EV that the Rivian has a few of. So elementary items for an EV, I think, for them to have, which is on-route battery preconditioning to a DC fast charger, which is the car is either going to cool down the pack or warm up the pack based off of its predicted plug-in state of charge. and the charger's power level. You don't want it to DC to battery precondition on your way to a 50 kilowatt charger, because the truck can take that no matter what, pretty much any time. And so that logic's really important. Secondly is route planning. So choosing the fastest way to get you to the end destination. But it's not just route planning nominally, like assuming everything's great. It's route planning and then saying, oh, that station's getting full. We're actually going to pull you into the one early and dynamically adjust based off of traffic. Mm-hmm. And that means they need to pipe in the real-time station traffic from Electrify America, EVgo, ChargePoint, et cetera, which the EQS does. So it's possible. And then you need plug-in charge, where you can just walk in, plug in the charger, and walk away. These are like the three most basic items. And the Rivian is not really good at any of them. And so I would really like to see those included as soon as possible. And then, you know, getting nerdier too, like setting your arrival state of charge percentage. You know, in the EQS, I can say, get me there at 3%. Or maybe it's the Taycan, like, get me there at 3%. Because that, in those cars, the charging curve is plug in dead, charge to 50% and go. Not dissimilar from the Rivian, where you really want to spend most of your time in the bottom half of that pack on a road trip, charging to maybe 60% state of charge and then go into the next. And so it'd be great to set some of these things.
That's really interesting to me. And Kyle, I've never thought, actually the Rivian is going to be my first EV, and I've never thought that far along. I mean, obviously I knew that, just because I'm kind of a technology and mechanics guy, if you will, that battery preconditioning would be important. But from, you know, a technology business person, I think there's an opportunity to have like a cloud-based solution that multiple auto manufacturers can leverage. And I don't know whether ABRP or any of those that already have some of that logic built in are pursuing that, but that sounds like a tremendous opportunity for me.
You can see it's different for every car, and it would be a little bit difficult to use a third-party solution, because you would really need to get the vehicles into a test lab before launch and, you know, program this or rely on manufacturer supplied data, which isn't always accurate, even in the engineering world. And so it's better, I think, to have this vertically integrated in-house, just on board, so it can work with or without cell service. And every car is different. Like Hyundai Ioniq 5, Kia EV6, for example, those cars don't actually have the thermal envelope or the thermal capacity to handle a theoretical max charging session starting at, you know, 0%. And so in those cars, it actually makes sense to plug in a little bit later, where you're not going to get rapid heating at low state of charge from high power charging if you need to go the distance. And so it's always variable. But this is a big hole in a lot of vehicles right now, is this whole battery preconditioning situation. Tesla's got it down, but let me tell you, it took them years to get this correct. I remember when the Model 3 launched, they were thermal limiting like crazy getting to chargers. Then they introduced on-route battery preconditioning, and it was pretty crazy. And even now today, when you roll into a Tesla, into a DC fast charger, even if the cells are warm, it's cranking the heater, and then it's like, oh, now I'm too hot, and cranks the AC. I'm like, well, that's efficiency that we're just blowing out the water here. So even they're leaving some, you know, power on the table in terms of power efficiency, which is what we really should be focused on with EVs, in my opinion. So no one's perfect, but Rivian definitely has a lot of opportunity to grow in this area.
Yeah.
Dude, super interesting. Thank you.
Super interesting. Jimmy, we want to follow up. We want to keep rolling.
Keep rolling.
Yeah. As I go to this next one, there was a lot of people appreciate that if you look in the comments. All right, here we go. This next one's from Doug. On your R1T road trip, it seems you were coming to the conclusion that the conserve mode was in some cases not worth the trade-off in ride quality versus range increase. So do you have any guess as to what the 78 mile per hour range is in all purpose, or would that need to be tested?
Yeah, well, I tried to do a test where I put it in every different drive mode configuration, tonneau, open, closed, all at 70 miles an hour. The problem is we only had the truck for a week. And so I was like, you know, I was starting this test. It was like 10 o'clock at night. And I'm like, okay, this is going to take me through the night. But then the problem was yeah, just did a too short of a loop and everything was coming back with the exact same results. And even in the real world, this truck in conserve mode versus all purpose isn't that big of a difference. And I've heard there's some talk about this clutch disconnect on the rear axle going around. I'm not convinced. I definitely didn't feel it doing its thing. It would make sense because in one of our early videos, a snow video, I nailed it, floored it on a snowy road, and it didn't blend any rear power in, which I thought was odd tuning. This is before I knew it had a disconnect. And, you know, I think I even commented in these videos, like, they should put a disconnect in here because they're permanent magnet motors. If you have a permanent magnet motor and you're trying to basically have no power to it, you do need to put some smoothing power in there so that the motor's not just bucking at you and creating backwards friction. Like, they will have inherent losses if you don't disconnect a permanent magnet motor. And it's possible they have it, but I didn't feel it connecting or disconnecting at all throughout my drive.
Yeah, so I actually had a conversation with a high-ranking engineer at Fully Charged Live a little bit over 2 years ago, and it is absolutely a mechanical disconnect that's in the gearbox.
Yeah, so it would have to be motors. Yeah, and that makes sense. That's great that they have that because they should, and it totally makes sense as to why in conserve mode it wasn't blending any sort of power or regen from the rear axle. You even noticed in those videos, I was saying, like, well, all the regen's coming from the front here because this feels weird. Yeah, didn't know that they had a disconnect at the time. Makes sense. Think it's the right move for them, and never even felt it because under partial load, I went all-purpose conserve a couple times, and their reconnect strategy was really smooth because I was just like, oh, motors are on. I didn't even feel a ka-chunk or anything like that, which you can feel it in Ioniq 5 and EV6, which is the only other mass production car with a disconnect.
Yeah. No, and he said they actually put a lot of thought into how to be able to reconnect it quickly. So pretty interesting.
Basically, what you need to do is you need to rev match the motors. So you spin the motors real quick to match input-output shaft, and then they connect. But of course, there's a clutch there because under weird driving scenarios, your speeds might be a little different. So in theory, it's a wear component, but not very heavily and probably won't ever wear out, you know, in these cars, I don't think. I do worry about the Ioniq 5 EV6, though, because sometimes it takes a second for that front motor to rev match and, has this very odd lagging period. But I don't think in the Rivian you're going to be going conserve and all-purpose that often down the road.
Yes. Yeah. Yep, totally agree. So when it comes to configuring an R1T or S, a round Rivian Stories, get more questions about what wheel and tire options and selections than anything else, especially this goes back a while. So I know that you mentioned you'd spec 20-inch ATs for the T. What would you spec for the S? And can you tell us more about your friend Drew and what your ideal wheel or tire setup would be, even if it is having two sets? I know there's a ton in there. Sorry. Go answer it, you can.
Yeah. So let's start, I think, more broadly, which is, are wheels really going to impact your ownership experience? And the answer is not really. I mean, not a huge, huge deal. Wheels will have an effect on full charge range, but I think I drive more than the average person where, yeah, like if I had the 22s or the aero wheels or whatever, you know, the all terrains that we had, I don't think like it wouldn't impact the use of my truck. It's not the difference between I'm making it or not making it to a charging station. So I would say people definitely overthink these items, not just for Rivian, but for all cars. Oh my goodness, like I'm going to go and choose this tire and this, like, am I going to make it to my house? Like, it's not that big of a difference. A lot more of it comes down to driving style, but it does have an impact on range, of course. But then again, like how often are you going to be driving, you know, 303 miles versus 297 miles? I don't know, like just slow down 3 miles an hour and you can make it with the less efficient wheels. Mm-hmm. So
thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit, just generally a little bit blown out of proportion. What wheels would I choose? Well, I saw the Magna truck they were benchmarking was beautiful. It was a launch green on black 22-inch sport wheels, R1T. And I was like, wow, that's hot. Mm-hmm. And so I really actually, and my colleagues totally disagree with me. I think I like the truck on the big wheels. I think it looks awesome. And then I would get a set of like super aggressive beadlock off-road, something crazy, you know, just swap them on and off. And you know, we're definitely in a lucky world where I have a lift downstairs where I can swap wheels and tires in 2 seconds. And, you know, it doesn't take much effort or time. And so multiple sets, I think, is the answer for me. I think the all terrains were very mind blowing in their noise, their grip, their ability to handle really well. And, you know, sort of tire response, you could tell it was a 34 inch tire and, you know, a 20 inch wheel or whatever it was. So, you know, it's not as sharp as I imagined the sport wheels would be. I think on R1S, big wheels without question, like for me, I think that's, if that's like your daily driver, just go, you know, go baller style there. But, but I think, generally the wheels don't really impact your, you know, once you get used to whatever you have on the truck, you'll be fine, I think. And we were out there on the 22s with the Magna truck. Like, they were in deep mud with this thing. I can't really show you any pictures, maybe one day, but like, it was still doing kind of fine.
We saw, I forget who it was, but like 22s on some trails that got a little bit gnarly, and I was like waiting for something bad to happen the whole time, but you know, they got through it. But it's just been a long
wheel, and it's a truck, and so tear it up, in my opinion. Everything can be fixed.
So Nikki says, that's it. Schultz is getting the 22s.
Oh, yeah, he is. He was already, Nikki.
So yeah, so I was originally, so I have the S, and it's in that L cap, which is the dark gray, which is super sleek.
Ooh, very
and
then nice.
Bright 22s, it's like so darn classy and like such a great combo just from aesthetics. And we've actually said that, like, beyond function, it's not a ton, but like, you get what you think looks great. I mean, and you'll be fine. You know,
so. Honestly, for the most part, so things I've learned being around cars and owners and seeing people out on trails, like 99.9% of the time, people will spec the most aggressive tire and go off-road one day a year. And then, you know, their version of off-road isn't even that crazy. And so, like, you're usually just fine on the big wheels for most people. And now, out here in Colorado, it's a little different. People actually wheel out here, and we have some pretty gnarly trails. And so, you know, like I mentioned, I'm definitely going to get a Rivian, probably R1T, as soon as possible. I think if I had to choose one selection, it would probably be the 20s for that truck, just because of their all-around capability. But thankfully, we're not locked into just one set. So I think I'd go, you know, daily set and then off-road, beat it up, you know, scratch it against stuff. Who cares?
Yep.
And have you talked to Drew over at Martian about, R1T wheel stuff?
Yeah, so Drew is like my best friend. He lives, you know, we're together all the time. And so he drove this truck around a little bit and fell in love with it. He obviously was in some of the videos with us and the drag racing stuff, getting beaten by the Rivian. And so, you know, Drew, what's interesting about Drew is he doesn't come from an off-road background. He comes from a rally background. And so he's into high strength, you know, just absolutely jumping cars, beating the crap out of them. And he started this Martian Wheels company, honestly, from the ground up. Mad respect to him for making the lightest weight, strongest wheel, while also factoring in cost for Tesla vehicles. And I've had multiple of his wheels on my personal vehicle, and they've honestly taken a beating without even coming out of shape at all, where I've, like, you know, dented and bent at least 5 or 6 different factory wheels on Teslas. And so I was like, Drew, it's time. You got to get into the off-road business. And he said, 100% agree. He took some measurements on the R1T that we had. So he has all the measurements he needs. And now starts the design prototyping phase. I'm not sure how quickly it's going to happen. With just logistics in the world, it's taking forever to get stuff shipped around because he has contacts in Europe and Asia and here in the US that are all making different components for his wheels. And honestly, he's got a huge backlog as it is for Tesla stuff. I mean, his order numbers, he's like, please stop saying our name on YouTube because we can't fulfill the orders. And so, yeah, basically it's probably not going to happen right away, but whatever wheel he does make is going to be, you know, in my opinion, the best compromise between cost and strength.
Yeah.
Dude, super that's cool. Awesome. I've said from day one that I'd love to see smaller than a 20 inch wheel for off-road stuff, But yes. Man, those front calipers are pretty big. Huge. I was really hoping I'd be able to squeeze an 18 on there with a little bit more sidewall and maybe even a slightly shorter tire. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. So Timon's really our resident off-road enthusiast, and he should actually be coming here momentarily. They're out on a shoot right now. And we measured it up. There's not much clearance with the current wheels to like go down in size. But what Drew did was he figured out a way to get 18s to fit on a Model 3 or Model Y performance, which up to that point, everyone thought you needed the 19s or 20s just to fit over the calipers. And so perhaps an 18 won't be possible, maybe a 19. The nice thing about an 18 is there's just a ton of tire selection when you get down there. Mm-hmm. And so that's the big goal here. And maybe there will even be a brake downsizing kit for that. You could basically give up, some stuff, and that will work. Because the brakes are sized really well for the truck. They perform wonderfully. If you can give up a little bit of longevity from a braking standpoint, you'll still get on-limit braking, pretty good with a smaller caliper and rotor setup. So yeah. I could see that becoming a retrofit option soon.
No, that's actually a great point.
Awesome. Hey, you can answer this one a little bit quickly. It's up at 7 votes, so it's my next one up, but we're kind of on this wheel situation, and Doug had asked about the 70 mile per hour range test and that the drop was only 8% because those ATs went 290 miles and the Rivian's estimate was 10 to 15% drop. So we'll probably need more tests, but right now that ranks the R1T with just a handful of others that perform up to and possibly better than the EPA rating. Is that correct? Or do you want to speak in anything?
There's
there?
A lot to unpack there. You can't gauge the percent drop that we did because we never did a standard test. This is just the first test. So mm-hmm. we've never done it on the arrows, but I think it's J1634 is the official SAE 5-cycle multi-cycle test that they run the cars through that Rivian did. And Rivian, I believe, actually sent their vehicle to a laboratory to put it on a sort of rolling dyno. It's called a chassis dyno. And the way that works is basically the manufacturer will submit coast down data to the testing laboratory that does the work. And coast down data basically takes in wind resistance, tire rolling, friction, and everything. Basically says, how far does it take to stop in neutral from 70 miles an hour or 60 miles an hour, et cetera. They then apply that onto a multi-cycle test. There's five different cycles of driving that they run the vehicle through from 100% to zero traditionally. And then, basically they spit out a number at the end. But I think the new updated for 2021, I'm not sure what the Rivian went through, now only shows that you have to bring the vehicle down to 50%. And then they use an off-board battery drainer to drain the battery all the way down to measure its full total capacity. It's pretty complicated, but it's very different than our testing is what I'm trying to get to. Is our testing is a little bit more real world, a little bit more variance is allowed. Don't get me wrong, in the EPA testing as well, there's a lot of variance and there's a lot of like testing laboratory procedure stuff that isn't done properly. And so what we see are cars that are misrated out on the roads and those tend to really, we see these big deviations from what we're finding. And so range testing, it's a little bit like the Wild West right now. There's different tests you can run your cars through. There's different laboratories. There's different certifications. There's like, it's no one has a standard really, truly yet. And, we're going to have a whole video out on this soon, talking with test engineers in laboratories that we're working on at the moment. And night I've been reading the J1634 updated in 2021 SAE basically guide on official range testing recommendations. And there's like so much room for fibbing. It's like not even funny how like, variable this stuff can be. So when you look at our test data, you can't say it's 10% less than what Rivian got because they ran a multi-cycle test. They never did a constant speed test like we did. And their constant speed tests are done at 65 and ours are done at 70. So it's not comparable.
Mm-hmm. Right. The other thing is Rivian did say that to get their EPA results, they tested in a variety of drive modes where your range test was either all or primarily in conserve mode, right?
So typically the vehicles are tested in key up setting, which would be all purpose. because when you get in the vehicle, that's what it defaults to. And this is why Tycon back in the day had really poor range by the EPA, but would always smoke it in our tests because it had the rear motor disconnect. But in key up setting, it was always locked in. I don't know if there's actually a recommendation in the current J1634 range test as to which modes you can and can't run updated for 2021. I'm not sure. And so, like I said, these are all the variables that are allowed. And I'm not an expert in this by any means, but I know experts and they're going to help us with videos on this. And like I said, it's the Wild West. But what we do is we run every EV at 70 miles an hour from full until it doesn't move anymore. And, you know, that's our way of ensuring that we get the entire battery capacity out of it. But it is variable temperature, wind. We typically run, you know, on public roads. So, you know, you come up on a truck, you got to drop it a mile an hour. Sometimes you got to get past, we got to raise it. And so it's not, we try to make it as accurate as possible, but we don't have a chassis dyno to do it, which we're actually looking into. We'll talk about that more next year or something like that. But I'd like to have our own test laboratory stuff here.
Wow. Holy smokes. Wow. So halftime, stretch, get your massage chairs out. As we're going there, I got like a, you don't have to answer, you can answer this as quick as you can. And then Jimmy, Skylar, if you have anything you want to interject before I go back to the questions, that's fine too, because you guys might be seeing stuff in chat box. What I am just interested in, as I've heard you this week and then today, like you're talking about, I know experts, we have these sources. I was doing some reading. Nikki says it was a little light reading. I'm like, I laughed at that because I'm like, yeah, this guy's sitting here reading. Can I just ask the personal question? Like, what is your background as far as schooling? And are you mostly self-taught with your expertise right now? Tell me a little bit about it.
Oh, yeah. It's all, I don't think anyone could teach you how to review a car. So I never finished college and totally think, you know, for what I do, went and was like, this isn't for me. Like, absolutely. I don't want to learn about the history of the Mayans doing what I'm like, I don't care. Like, how do I play with cars?
Right.
And so it's all self-taught. It's all just reading and awesome. Honestly doing what we do. We have a lot of access and forged relationships with engineers in the auto industry, specifically in Germany with a lot of the German engineers I'm very close with. And so really, you know, get to live my dreams instead of designing and engineering cars by learning about it and sharing it with our audience.
No, yeah, I honestly meant like, do you have an engineering background formally or is it
mostly?
Yeah.
I totally agree. Just the way that you approach things, I was guessing either science or engineering, one of the two.
Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah, none, zero. I didn't even pay attention in school. Even when I went, I was never physically, you know, I was never mentally present.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super, super cool.
Quick question. I saw somewhere, and I can't remember where, a Launch Green R1T that was near or around you guys. I also saw just random internet video of a Launch Green R1T hauling hay in Colorado. Is there anything related there?
Yeah, so no correlation. I saw that same truck hauling. Hey, I don't know who that was or what was going on, but I thought it was awesome. But the Launch Green here in town is our new friend Will, who's a viewer. And I think he also is part of your Rivian Stories network, awesome. Perhaps. I don't know. He at least was familiar with what you're doing. And he was the first one to get a truck here in town. He shot us an email. He's like, hey, I just got mine. Like, what are you doing today? I'm like, well, just bring it by. And then we like brought him out to the runway. We were drag racing it. Then we all got dinner and he's buying a ranch. He's like the coolest guy ever. And he's like, yeah, use our truck for whatever you need. I'm like, great. That's what we need in town.
That's cool.
So yeah, great guy. And that's the thing. Because we are, you know, truly everyone on my team is really passionate about cars. We get to meet our viewers out and about, and we see a lot, you know, every day we're talking to people that come up to us or we're talking about cars, and we really do get a lot of forged relationships, a lot of friends, because we're all, you know, all just car nerds.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. All right. So from Bruce, lack of heat pump and lack of battery preconditioning have been brought up frequently on the forums about these first R1 vehicles, first gen. So we know that the heat pump is being added in 2024, but what is your opinion on how important these features are for everyday use? And does it depend on where you live and drive?
Yeah, well, battery preconditioning is massively important because you know, everyone, no matter where you live, will experience a really hot or really cold day pretty much in the US. And so we live in an area of temperature extremes. It's not like we're in the UK where it's 55 degrees everywhere every day. And so, you know, we need battery preconditioning. It should just be standard. Also, just for charging station throughput, the charging station companies, they need to get people in to charge. The shorter amount of time you're there charging, the more customers they can serve. Profitably is another question. The answer is no right now. And what was the other thing that he was curious about? There was one more.
Let me look here.
The heat pump.
Oh, heat pump. Ah, not that big of a deal. I mean, on such a big battery pack like that, it becomes less of a deal. And if it is to you, just buy your truck today, sell it when your heat pump one comes in, and you're not going to lose anything.
Mm. Yep. Good deal.
You'll get an extra 3 miles of range or something very insignificant. I mean, it might be, you know, closer to 3%. So you know, it's not insignificant as I'm making it, but basically not that big of a deal. Once it's warm and you get a resistive heater hot, it's warm.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you what, though. I think Rivian heard so much from the community because Tesla moved to heat pumps that they actually said, okay, we're going to do it. And yeah, I don't think it's a big deal on a relatively inefficient vehicle with such a big battery pack. But, you know, I think they're kind of playing to the market a little bit.
Of course, they're just trying to shut people up, right? They want to conquer every single step of the way. And I'm not sure if this is their reasoning. It would be mine. It would just get annoying to be Rivian. You built this amazing truck and like, you know, one thing you keep hearing is a heat pump. And it honestly isn't that hard to put a heat pump in a vehicle. So they're like, I'll just throw the damn thing in.
Yep. Interesting. Yep.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Right. But I mean, you got the heat pumps in Teslas that are failing. You know, this whole past year.
Hopefully they don't use the same component. We've also heard of PTC heaters failing in Teslas from early days as well. And so, yeah, and any component will fail. Tesla stuff, not very well integrated. Totally agree. Big issues in extreme cold climates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even, I mean, we don't need to get too into the Tesla stuff, but like they should have done some cold weather testing on that unit and, you know, seen some of the potential flaws that could have come up. I'm sure Rivian will take notice. They'll adapt their system and it will be a non-issue, but maybe it'll have a totally separate issue. We just don't know. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's not like heat pump technology is new or that, you know, complicated to make happen.
Right.
Skylar, do you want to chase 800 volt what Bryce is saying over there?
Well, so, you know what? He's absolutely correct.
Yep.
You know, they should shut us up with 800 volt. But the thing is, they've already told us that they're going to shut us up with 800 volt. So the dual motor variants of the Rivian are going to be on a native 800 volt architecture, not just 800 volt charging where you have a switch and kind of split the pack and do all the things, but the, you know, the future next generation of quad motor variant is going to be on 800 volt as well. So they're already in process of addressing it, right?
Yep.
And what I've heard, what I understand is that, and this could be wrong, but it is something that I've heard, but the current generation of R1 vehicles do not have that switch and split pack from what I understand.
That's what they told me. That's what the PR comms people that I work with mostly told me when I asked them. But again, they're not as deep technical as we tend to get. So it's possible. I mean, until someone tears open the pack, we don't really know, right? My guess is it probably doesn't have it in there because it's not like it's that crazy hard technology to make happen. The hardest thing with the 400 to 800 volt switch is then also running your 400 volt system components while charging at 800, because you need to have basically a DC to DC booster, but actually a reduction to run your AC compressor, to run your pumps that are all 400 volt, let's just say, but your battery pack's an 800 volt state. And the only reason to do the 400 to 800 volt switch is just so you don't have to run the rest of your components in the truck at 800 volts, which saves money because 400 volt components, well, they're really 600 volt rated components, are cheaper than 1000 volt rated components in a vehicle. And back when Rivian was designing this battery pack, you know, back at the fully charged event, I was talking to some of the battery engineers a couple of years ago, about this exact topic. And they basically were just like, yeah, it's cost. Like, we'd have to engineer a lot of stuff. We couldn't buy off the shelf components. Just 2 years ago, there were no really off the shelf available, you know, 1,000 volt capable, you know, AC compressors and all of these things that have to run. And even today, it's a little bit more difficult. Like, Porsche took the most expensive route. Hyundai, Kia, Genesis with EGMP took the most expensive route of designing, engineering, and speccing things in-house for their vehicles or through their suppliers for their vehicles. And I think Rivian made the right choice at 400 volts for the time when that vehicle was being engineered.
Yeah.
All I know, Jimmy, is that was a lot of numbers. That was a lot of stuff. Wow.
So check it out. Actually, the Kyles were both on the left-hand side of the screen earlier. Now we've got the numbers and the nerd guys over at me.
Yeah, that's right. Woo! Come on, Nikki. Well,
so one thing we should mention is you know, Bryce, who's been really integral and very helpful in our charging analysis and stuff. And I think we're going to have Bryce come on our Out of Spec podcast at some point soon.
Nice.
I've already talked to Jordan about it because he gets charging, which is awesome. It's hard to find people who do. But basically, yeah, you're Bryce, the guy in the comments, CGO. Wow. And so that's who we're going to have on. 800 volts basically would allow for faster DC fast charging. The reason is the CCS specification in public use is limited to nerd numbers, get prepared, 500 amps at whatever the vehicle's pack voltage is. So the higher your pack voltage, you can still run 500 amps because that's its power limitation, up to, I think, 1,000 volts is the spec. I'm not sure where the cap is or if there is a voltage cap. And so if you can bump up to 800 volts, you can essentially get twice the power you can at 400 volt. So, you know, upwards of serious power.
Bryce is being a good sport over there in the comments.
Bryce is great.
He is great, but yeah, Bryce, he said, I thought I was just annoying. No, you're annoying too, but you're awesome.
So. Yeah.
Not awesome. Really. I love Bryce.
So have you guys all driven the truck?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What yeah, are your impressions? I'm just curious.
We three got to go up to Normal, Illinois for the inaugural First Mile event that took place there at the factory.
Oh, and neat.
And yeah, so I'm a big Jeep guy. I was super impressed with the off-road performance of the suspension over various obstacles. And especially when we got kind of a special ride, a hot lap with one of the Rivian employees that was able to take it to speeds that, you know, we weren't able to when we were driving. And man, the suspension just amazing. The other thing that really blew me away was the throttle mapping and even the steering response, just the power of software to change the vehicle dynamics is, yeah, what really kind of caught me off guard, being a traditional car guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. I mean, the suspension is otherworldly in not all the best ways either, because when you run the truck in conserve mode, it is like no large automaker would ever let a vehicle leave its factory with a mode that lets the truck, you know, basically that would allow it to drive in the same manner that the Rivian does in conserve mode, because there's no suspension travel and it's really bouncy. But there's so many benefits to having it like that, which would all come from range and efficiency and even potentially better handling when you have it all lowered down in sport. But I think Rivian can do these big, daring, huge suspension, you know, pushing things right up to the limits of what a customer would find comfortable, because they're new and they don't have all of these, you know, spec data that we have to tune out this pothole response or this, you know, motion. They basically have an unwritten set of rules that no other automaker would allow a vehicle to go as crazy as the Rivian does from a articulation off-road standpoint all the way to, you know, sort of this crazy efficiency, sitting on the ground, aired out. Because conserve mode's no joke. That thing doesn't ride well in conserve mode.
And that's at the lowest setting.
Yes.
And I'd be curious to see what the efficiency difference is between the lowest setting. And I understand that the conserve can also go at standard ride height.
No, it goes to low.
So, yeah.
You're right.
In standard, it's skip right. low.
Yes. But it won't go into standard at speed. So I think at speed, you're locked in at the bottom, if I remember correctly.
Really?
Because at low speed, it will go back to standard if you had it previously selected. That's how I think it works.
Yeah, interesting. But yeah, that's something that I'd be interested in testing because, yeah, I'd like to be more efficient, but I also don't want to be uncomfortable. And how big is that?
It's not worth the trade-off. So I've figured out basically it's not worth the trade-off to run in conserve mode unless you're like, I really need to stretch it to this charger. Or in a lot of cases, what I think we'll find is I'm heading to the trailhead. I don't know how deep I'm going to go. I'm going to put it in max conserve mode, get me as much energy possible so that I can go on the longest possible adventure. And I think that's really its main use case, in my opinion.
Yep.
All right. Hey, yes, do you have time to do like a few more questions?
I got all the time in the world. Right. Seriously, well, I have nothing left for the rest of the night. I know you may not want this to go super long, but I'm good.
We're planning on an hour. We're right there right now. But if we could do a couple extra, I could. Jimmy, Skylar, are you up for a few minutes extra for
us? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not, like I said, I'm not sleeping tonight. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So you get your tomorrow. Truck. How does that work when you get your truck? Are they bringing it to your house? Or are you going there to get it?
It'll be on a rollback all the way from Atlanta to Jacksonville.
Oh, from Atlanta to Jacksonville, Florida.
Correct.
Wow.
Nice. You should have just gone up there and gotten it.
That would have been sweet. But literally Tuesday morning, we're driving it over to the local detail shop for PPF and everything else. So the fewer chips and everything else that it will have in the paint, the better.
Totally agree. You know, we're buying a few new cars this year, and we've had those conversations as to which ones do we protect and we think we're going to keep and which ones do we not. And basically, it's if that vehicle rolls for even 3 or 4 miles down the road, you could get pitting, you could get all this stuff. And it's just at that point, it's a lost cause. So it's got to be perfect day one, probably even correct the paint after it comes out of the, you know, out of the wrapper when you get it, and then paint protection it, you know, do that whole process, or you just literally don't care about it for the rest of its life. And these are the only two ways you can go.
Do you test charging adapters, and have you tried charging the R1T at a Tesla charger?
Yep. And that's what I have at my house. I have two load shared Tesla wall connectors and then the adapter. And yeah, it works fine, which is great. Some cars don't play so nice with it. Some do. The Rivian had no issue in the ones I've tried.
Yep.
But again, AC charging is pretty simple. I mean, that's just like hi, I'm a car, hi, I'm a charger. Give me this much power. I can give you that much and then go for it. So there's not much to go wrong in AC charging communications. There's still some, and sometimes you have to put the Tesla connector in, wait 3 seconds for some reason, and then plug it into the truck. I don't know. I would caution those who are getting the adapters, though. A lot of them are rated at 40 amps, and the truck has a 48 amp onboard charger. Thankfully, they make it very easy for you to derate your intake power. But make sure you don't, like, for short bursts, I'm not officially recommending this. 48 amps, whatever. If you need the juice for 30 minutes and it's cold outside, crank that sucker through. I had to do that a couple times at my house just because the truck was moving, and 8 amps, not a huge difference. Just don't do like a full charge, especially in warm weather. Make sure you spec the truck to go down to the maximum that your adapter allows.
Yep. Somebody wants to know what adapter you have or you use.
Oh, I think they all just work the same. You just get whatever one you want.
Yeah. I mean, it's, they're I don't pretty know which simple one I devices. Have. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're all just wires. I mean, it's all done. They're all probably not built the best. They're all not built the worst. And they're all pretty, you know, just dumb devices. I don't know which one to get.
Yep.
I have a couple different ones. They all do the same thing.
Sweet. I'm interested in this next one by Doug. He says, while none of us have seen, much less driven, an R1S, do you have any expectations for it based on the T? What impact do you think the slightly shorter wheelbase will have?
I think you will be able to get out of an R1T and into an R1S and look forwards and feel no difference.
Yep.
Is my prediction.
Yep.
I think that there will be a little bit of handling difference. And I think that there could be an improvement just due to the shorter wheelbase and the physics. I mean, especially for kind of harder on-road driving, right? And obviously there's benefits off-road as well with, you know, better breakover angle and all the rest. But I think that you'll be able to feel it on the road.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're going to feel it in normal driving for your average consumer. No question that Skylar, you and I could get it out and be like, oh, this is night and day. I just don't know if like my mom would get in it and be like, this is the totally different type of.
But
definitely for off-roading, you're going to want the R1S because shorter wheelbase. And so everything you mentioned, maneuverability, turning radius, breakover angle, potentially approach and departure, probably not approach, but maybe departure angle would be a little bit better. So basically all good stuff with the R1S, and you know, Alyssa really wants an R1S in our house, and I really want an R1T, and so you know, we have way too many cars coming this year to get a T and an S at the same time. So what we're thinking is we might get an R1T and then swap it for an R1S down the line. I don't know. We'll see.
Yep. Hey, so this next one, can you talk a little bit about battery degradation? And this is Doug again, and he mentioned that your estimate of 11% was impressive and a bit of a surprise. And assuming that Rivian has BMS that's well designed, do you think Rivian owners can expect a similar curve for degradation?
It's too early to tell. I mean, it's all down to the cell chemistry. It's how Rivian's managing the heat in the cells. And also there's different degradation strategies. Some automakers will eat into a predetermined buffer to hide degradation. They'll let you just open up the usable pack capacity so that you don't even really notice it. And so it's too early to tell. What I can say based off of my experience with Tesla stuff, running it to high mileage, is don't even worry about it. Drive the truck, drive the car, and do what you want, but take care when you can. You know, I just put out a video today on Out of Spec Reviews on everything I've done with my Model 3 and 100,000 miles. And you know, even though we don't drive the vehicle much anymore, I think it's an interesting test because we keep the vehicle at 50% state of charge for long-term storage. And the batteries don't like to be full. They don't like to be dead. They like to be right in the middle. And I think it's going to be the same for the Rivian. If you stick to a 70% daily charging limit, should be fine. But really, we're talking minuscule differences if you charge to 85% every day versus 70. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't full charge it every day, though, because it really does limit up top. I would just use that sparingly.
Interesting.
Yep. So quick fun fact is that based on the Samsung cells that Rivian is using, I think that the gross pack capacity is actually just shy of 145 as opposed to 135. And so that could play in as well.
Yeah. And so they might be super conservative and open it up later on. And, you know, it's always hard to tell where they're hiding the buffers, at the bottom or the top. There's definitely a lot of buffer down low because the truck had great response, great throttle all the way up past 0% state of charge. And so we know there's some more, you know, on the bottom side of the pack. At the top side of the pack, it's not like it ever went to 1 kilowatt at, you know, charging up at 99, 100%. So there's some buffer up there too. And yeah, they got buffer top and bottom. They got a lot of room to work with. My guess is they've let the trucks get out there super conservatively, and then they'll open it up over time through software if they choose. Yep.
Agreed. And I think they may have even made some statements to that effect at one point in time. So more to come.
Okay, folks, that is it for this recording. Again, if you want to listen to the full hour and a half recording, just hop on over to rivianstories.com, become a backer, and we're going to have more of these kind of things in the future. But for now, the last thing, a special thank you again to Kyle Connor of Out of Spec. As you can see, tremendous dude with a ton of knowledge, and he has actually been involved in the community over at rivianstories.com. So there's a lot of good reasons to come join us over there. But for now, thanks for listening.